All right, so we're reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 10, and we're going to be doing text 23. I'm going to read a couple of translations from earlier as well. And who remembers who's speaking to who in this chapter? Well, there's actually, it's kind of a conversation. They go back and forth. So Nrsingadeva and Prahlad are speaking back and forth. This section, Nrsingadeva speaks to Prahlad. It's actually a really nice opportunity to hear what the Lord says to a devotee. If you think about this painting here on the wall, we have it every day, we see it, right? This is kind of the scene in which this chapter is taking place, where Lord Nrsingadeva's calm and happy and peaceful, Hiranyakashipu's gone, and he's instructing Prahlad on what to do next. So I like to think about that image, Lord Nrsingadeva being very gentle with his devotee. So we'll start with text 11, and Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So text 11, the Supreme Personality of God had said, "My dear Prahlad, a devotee like you never desires any kind of material opulences, either in this life or in the next. Nonetheless, I order you to enjoy the opulences of the demons in this material world, acting as their king until the end of the duration of time occupied by Manu." Does that shock anybody? Does that surprise anyone? Probably not at this point, you already know, but it could potentially surprise someone, right? And it reminds me of a verse in Bhagavad Gita. I'm curious if anyone can think of it, where Krishna says that be happy, enjoy. Which verse can you think of? Yes, it's in Bhagavad Gita 3:10. Krishna saying, in the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures himself, he sent forth generations of men and demigods, and along with sacrifices to them, for he said, here's the sacrifices you can do to Vishnu so that you can be happy. And he says, be happy by this sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. So by acting properly, material enjoyment comes of its own accord with that behavior, with proper behavior. So here Nrsingadeva is saying, Prahlad has been such an exemplary devotee that go ahead and enjoy these material opulences. And then he says in the next verse, it's not just enjoy, you'll see what he says down a little bit later. In the next verse, he says, it does not matter that you are in the material world. You should always continuously hear the instructions and messages given by me and always be absorbed in thought of me, for I am the supersoul existing in the core of everyone's heart. Therefore, give up fruitive activities and worship me. So that's the crux of it. That's how Prahlad Maharaj will be happy, is by doing this part of it. It's not that Nrsingadeva saying, okay, go have a kingdom and be happy and just forget that you're part and parcel of me, but it's in connection of Krishna, in that offering of that service to Krishna, that the enjoyment comes. So that's a really important point. In this verse, text 12, there's a Sanskrit word, yogena, and Prabhupada translates it as, yoga means to link, right? To link with the Supreme. So Prabhupada translates it here as bhakti yoga. And I just noticed that, and I thought how Prabhupada was always wanted to make us very clear on personalism and connecting to Krishna, not just any kind of yoga, not just mental exercise, but a devotional experience. And then I'm not going to read through all the elements. I'm just, I'm going to just tell you what's in the next text. So the And then Nrsingadev says to Prahlad that by acting piously, he will be known throughout the world. Like he will become famous, actually. And it's that he says something really interesting, that by enjoying the benefits or the pious activity, let's see here. So by feeling happiness, he will exhaust all of the reactions of his pious activities, kind of burn them up, right? And then he says that, and by acting piously, he will neutralize all the negative things that might come. So basically, he'll get a clean slate just by acting piously in this world. But then because he's a devotee of Krishna, he will be known, he will return back to Godhead, and all of his praises will be sung in the different regions. So very auspicious future for Prahlad. Then Nrsingadev said, one who always remembers your activities and my activities also, and who chants the prayers you have offered, becomes free in due course of time from the reactions of material activities. So that's a great blessing, right? If we can do that, chant Prahlad's prayers. Then Prahlad takes a turn to speak, and he asks for one benediction, one request from Nrsingadev. Do you remember what it is? Yeah, hello. It's okay, just say it.
Oh, okay. Doesn't he ask like for his father to be liberated?
Yes, yeah. So his one request, it's not selfish at all. It's a concern for his dad, who, even though his father had done these atrocious acts upon him, he had abused him, basically child abuse, extreme version of it. And still Prahlad had cared so much about his father's eternal well-being, the soul of his father. Like he's concerned that he says, please, can you just excuse all of those sinful activities and help him on his journey towards you? So Nrsingadev immediately responded, and he said, oh yes, of course. Because you're a great saintly person, he says here, sadho, he calls him Prahlad, right? Sadhu, great saintly person. Because of that, there's 21 forefathers in your family will be purified. Interestingly, in the purport here, Prabhupada says that it's not just the family of this birth, but it's actually families of previous births, like our ancestors in previous births that also get benefited. You know, I always thought this would be a really amazing, I don't know if someone could make a production, like a media production, a movie or something about what would happen to those generations. They're just going about their lives, and suddenly they get some inexplicable mercy because somewhere else in another part of the world or another future time or past time or whatever, another person that has been connected to them has done something for Krishna. And it would just make such a, you know how they have these movies like going into the future, going back into the past, and how things can change. And so I thought this would be such an amazing, it would be so great to be able to see that kind of what happens. Does anyone ever read the book Holes or the movie?
So like there was some curse that was on the family from previous generations, and because the kid like carried the great grandson of some other up the hill, then he like helped him, and then they got free from the curse, and then they all became rich again. It's kind of like that, that like many, like maybe two generations afterwards, somebody did something which solved a problem that was created by the grandparents, the great grandparents, and then everything was good for the family.
Yeah.
How that, like, in what way does it help the previous generations? Like, so maybe they have taken birth in a new body or something like that, and then they get liberated from that body. Like, how does that manifest? Does that make sense?
What did you say?
They lose all their money.
Lose all their money. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
I heard a conversation by Prabhupada where devotees asked, what kind of liberation do relatives of devotees attain? And he said they become devotees. That's real liberation.
Mm-hmm. So the best, thank you for that answer, that the best liberation is to come in contact with the devotee of Krishna. Because then once you come in contact with the devotee, your future is bright. You can never... it's just, that's it. From there on, you're going to get, some way or other, Krishna's going to bring you back. Yeah. Oh, you can ask it now. Yeah.
So Prabhupada writes at several places that affection, concern for the family is like extended sense gratification, family, nation, society. And when I feel personally, when I feel like praying for my family, if they're having any troubles, then I feel that I'm being selfish because my family is connected with me and I'm praying for them. Mm-hmm. But I should be praying for the whole, suffering humanity or so on. So my question is, how do I understand Prahlad Maharaj praying for his father in particular mm-hmm. in that respect?
Yeah, we will talk about this a little bit. About connecting our experience in this world like to Krishna. And one of the ways we do that is by acknowledging those who have helped us in this life, whether it's like given birth to us or raised us or cared for us, taught new teachers, those who have taught us, those who have like friends, all the people that come in our circle, that one of the ways to spiritualize that relationship is by to be a well-wisher for them spiritually. And so that's actually a natural, Krishna wants us to do that, to be in this world and being connecting this world and this experience and our family and our all the relatives to Krishna, seeing through that lens. So it's a natural in this life to be have extra affection for those who are closer, and then we just dovetail that, Then we'll go to, then Nrisingadeva tells Prahlad to perform the ceremony to help his father. He said, because his father's dead, right? So he said, perform the ritualistic ceremony that a child performs for the dad so that father can be promoted to a higher place. And then finally, we'll do text 23. And we'll do this one in full. And then we'll speak about this topic about devotees performing worldly duties. That's the topic of today. Why does a devotee perform worldly duties? Because Nrisingadeva is telling Prahlad, go ahead and now run this kingdom. He's not saying to him, okay, now you know the perfection of life, so just pack it up and go to the woods and just, get liberated. He's saying, no, go learn about management and do all the things that a king would do. That's a lot of material, like that's being really involved materially in this world. Okay, so text 23. After performing the ritualistic ceremonies, take charge of your father's kingdom. Sit upon the throne and do not be disturbed by materialistic activities. Please keep your mind fixed upon me. Without transgressing the injunctions of the Vedas, as a matter of formality, you may perform your particular duties. So the Sanskrit for this verse, we'll sing it together. Pitriyam chastanam atishta yatoktam ramavadibi maya vishyamanastata guru karmani matpara. The word tata means my dear boy. I'm saying, my dear boy. Okay, purport. When one becomes a devotee, he no longer has any duty to the Vedic regulative principles. One has many duties to perform, but if one becomes fully devoted to the Lord, he no longer has any such obligations. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam,
Divarshi Bhutap Danrinam Pitrinam Nakin Karonayam Renicha Rajan Sarvatmanaya Sharanam Sharanyam Gato Mukundam Parivitya Kartam.
One who has fully surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord is no longer a debtor to his forefathers, the great sages, human society, the common man, or any living entity. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, nonetheless, so this is the turning point, because we could, if we just stop there, be like, okay, that's it. I have no duties. I don't have any family obligations. I'm out of here. But nonetheless, the Supreme Personality of Godhead advised Prahlad Maharaj to follow the regulative principles, for since he was going to be the king, others would follow his example. Thus, Lord Nrsingadev advised Prahlad Maharaj to engage in his political duties so that people would become the Lord's devotees.
Yad yad acharati sreshtas, tad tad evaitarajana, sayat pramanam kurute, lokas tad anuvartate.
Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. Bhagavad Gita 3:21. One should not be attached to any materialistic activities, but a devotee may perform such activities as an example to show the common man that one should not deviate from the Vedic injunctions.
So Om Gyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Shakshur Umilithamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
So why does a devotee perform worldly duties? In some ways, it's a little bit of a trick question, because once a devotee is purified to that point of being like a pure devotee, fully dedicated to Krishna, then those duties are no longer worldly, because everything a devotee does, they connect to Krishna. So, but while we're in this, you know, well, before we're fully pure, then the question becomes more applicable. Yes, like how do we perform, and why do we perform worldly duties? So the first reason is mentioned in this purport, that if a great personality behaves a certain way, then others will follow that way of behaving. So Prabhupada used to emphasize with his disciples a lot, like he wanted them to be ladies and gentlemen, right? That if how they behaved would reflect on their spiritual master. And he would stress this point, be ladies and gentlemen, set a good example for the society of what a devotee is. Yeah, and the interesting thing here is that Prahlad Maharaj, he's only 5 years old now, while Nrsingadev is telling him all this. And he was in school, and he was talking to his friends, and he was encouraging them to take up Krishna consciousness now, don't wait. Down the road, when he's king, I'm assuming, like, I don't know exactly what age. Does anybody know what age he started? I mean, he is now, but I'm sure he had a support system where they were kind of, because he's very young, they must have had a whole team of support for how to lead and like training him how to be the king. And then at some point they coronated him. Maybe it was immediately after. Actually, it was immediately after, wasn't it? Probably. Yeah, because it's in that in the past. So I guess he was very young when he got coronated. But anyway, he had a lot of support, and the brahmanas were guiding and so on. So then his role shifted from being like a school child encouraging his friends to now a leader. He has to set this good example of a person. And then going forward, he's going to have to now correct misbehavior in the kingdom. It's a totally different kind of role than being a kid at school and just encouraging your classmates. Now the kshatriya duty is to like behave in a way that teaches others how to behave, and then to correct their misbehaviors. So the first reason that we perform worldly duties is to be a good example to others. That's for like a really high standard. And then another reason is to inspire each other. So let's say that, let's make it like practical, relatable for today. Like, let's say that, who here is a student right now? Okay. So some students going to school. There, one way that we demonstrate, one way that we can perform worldly duties is to to remember that we can be an example to others who are going to do the same thing as us. So if we're a student, for example, and we're connecting that to Krishna, we're like living a life that's pious, like practicing bhakti yoga and connecting our studentship or our teaching, our learnings to Krishna, then the next, our friends who might be coming after us, like going to school after us, they can go, oh yeah, that person did it. See, that's an example of how to apply Krishna consciousness in that worldly experience. So we can be of encouragement to each other that way. Sometimes we might not be at that highest level of feeling like, oh, I'm an example. We might be struggling, like in our own experience. It might not be so easy to be that like good example of like a steady, here I am doing everything right. What do we do in that situation then? What do we do if, actually, Shruti, I was thinking about the cure of souls. You know, the cure of souls, like how just the idea that Ravindrasur Prabhu gave a seminar way back in the 90s, and he called it the cure of souls. And there's that idea of like being real devotees, like having, being able to be honest and sincere with our spiritual lives. So if I'm not at that top level, if I'm not like, you know, doing things, if I know that I'm not up to level, up to standard, or if my senior teachers have told me, hey, you're kind of lacking here, you need to work on this area, then to be an example for others, we can be sincere and go, oh, yes, I'm, this is where I'm at. And just that alone, just that act of being humble and honest about where we're at is an example to other devotees, because it shows that Krishna, you know, Krishna wants us to be real. He wants us to be who we are and just trying our best to come closer to him. So that kind of culture of being authentic devotees is really inspiring to others, to the world and within the community. So then most of us, for the rest of us who are not at this level of Prahlad Maharaj, that it's going to be, Prahlad is going to be connecting his whole kingdom experience, his whole kingship experience, his whole ruling experience to Krishna, right? Like he has nothing else in his mind but Krishna. That's his life. Some of us might be not at that level. So what do we do? Like what, the same question, like why, you know, what do we do if we're not at that standard? So Prabhupada, there was a story where Malati Devi, his disciple from the early days, she was sick in India, and Prabhupada came, stopped by her room to see how she was. And he asked her, and she said, oh, I'm so sorry, Prabhupada. I'm not able to do any service right now. I'm just lying here chanting in bed all day, something like that. And Prabhupada said, this is the highest service. Chanting is the highest service. The only reason I give you all so many other services is because your minds are so restless. You need to have things to do. So that's the purpose of devotional service, of a life in this world, is because we're restless, we need activity. We're not like bhajana nandis that can sit all day and chant. Most of us, some of you might be like that. So the reason for worldly duties is to dovetail our desire to use our senses and our mind and be active in this world as a service to Krishna. The other thing is that just the day-to-day life experiences of like the mundane tasks of brushing your teeth or driving your car to the store, things like that are part of keeping our body and soul together in this life as well. Prabhupada gave this analogy, and I can't remember where it is from. I think it's, maybe someone will know. There's an analogy about a son who he needs to stay alive long enough to get the inheritance of the parents. So similarly, Prabhupada was saying, we need to keep our body and soul together long enough so that we actually perfect our Krishna consciousness in this lifetime, so that we inherit that gift of Krishna consciousness. So that includes brushing our teeth, because if we don't brush our teeth, we'll probably get an infection, and that could, you know, things like that. And then it might shorten our life at the worst extreme. So caring for our body is a part of that, just part of what we need to do to practice Krishna consciousness. So those are some of the reasons why a devotee performs worldly duties. And I wanted to mention here that Prahlad his duty is very clear. Like Nrisingadeva is saying to him, okay, you're going to have a kingdom and you're going to, this is what you're going to do. And it's all set in stone for him about what his duty is. Some of us might be thinking, well, what is my duty? I don't know. It's confusing in Kali Yuga what our duty is. It's like a complicated mess here. We might have so many things that we are good at, like especially nowadays. It's actually a thing in this world where called the gig economy, right? People do like many different types of things. They're kind of all over the place. There's not maybe one clear trajectory for what we do as a career or what we what our nature is. We might dabble in a lot of things. So it has that kind of complexity to it. So the good thing is that Krishna makes it very simple for us. And he says in Bhagavad Gita, this is what, if you don't know what your duty is, here it is. So what it is, in a nutshell, always remember me, never forget me. That's our duty. And so it's simple. It's like, you know how Americans like these books, Computers for Dummies, or what's another one? I don't know. Psychology for Dummies, things like that. So this could be like Duties for Dummies. And in Kali Yuga, we also have very short attention spans. So we have a hard time like retaining a lot of detail, like this and this and this. And it's like, whoa, it's too much. I can't. But if I know, I just have to add Krishna more and subtract away the things that, you know, like remember Krishna, never forget him, basically. That's the thing. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, whatever you do, if you know the translation, you can say it with me. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, what give away, whatever austerities you perform, do that as an offering to me. Yeah. So that's very simple, right? Just whatever you're already doing, whatever you're inclined to do, do it for Krishna. We can pray to Krishna, please put me in situations where I can be of service. Maybe I'm doing something now, it's not optimal, and I'd like to do something that connects me more. So please allow that to happen for me so I can be of service to you. And in the meantime, whatever we are doing, we can find a way to connect that to Krishna, and we can ask guidance from our mentors, like on how to do that. So I want to brainstorm with all of you ways. Prabhupada came up with this really nice phrase, Krishna-izing our experience in this world. Like how to Krishna-ize it, how to connect it to Krishna. On Saturday, Sharanagati Saturday, you'll remember we did a bhajan where Bhaktivinoda Thakur was talking about the impetuses for his spiritual life. It was the Shuddha Bhakata Charanarinu bhajan. And he was thinking about the tulsi plant and the mridanga drum and the prasad and the like this green leafy vegetable that Lord Chaitanya loved, and all these things were shock. And he was feeling ecstasy and bliss, like seeing his whole home transform. So those were like, we were talking about how to connect our experiences in this world, like in Gainesville 2022, like how to do that, how to find ways to connect and relate to our experiences to Krishna, how to have those impetuses. So sometimes it's a direct connection. Like if we're in the temple room and we're seeing the altar and we're seeing Shishi Gornitai and it's a direct remembrance of Krishna that can come from that. Or we see a peacock feather, like let's say we're in a place where there are peacocks, there aren't any Gainesville, but if we were in New Vrindavan and we see a peacock feather on the ground, most likely we would go, oh, Krishna, right? We think about Krishna because he wears peacock feathers. So there are those things that directly remind us of Krishna. And then there's those things that it's harder to make the connection. It's not necessarily a clear cut, you know, connection for us. And that's where we have to work our intelligence. We have to think about how can I connect this to Krishna? So there's different ways that we can purify our duties. One is with, like, let's say we're in the world, like right now it's your duties are very straightforward, connected to Krishna. Like you're distributing prasadam, you're in an ashram, you're sharing literature, you know, like very directly connected. at some point in your life, it might be, you might have to think more about how to purify or Krishnaize your experiences, like in a regular job or so on. And so one way to do that is with how we use our time, how we use our money. Like the money is the biggest one, actually, for purifying our work experience in this world, like tithing for Krishna House or to any project that we're part of, to purify that resource and to connect it, right? And then the other one is the intelligence. And that's what I'm talking about here, is like coming up with creative ways to find how to connect this to Krishna. It's like a muscle, you know, like we go to the gym, we work out and build that muscle and get stronger. So you can build the muscle of the spiritual muscle of like connecting everything to Krishna. Because at the end of the day, this whole world is part of Krishna's energy. And we can find, this is an amazing place. One of the most incredible features of this material world is that it can do one of two things. It's designed in such a way that it can either help us forget Krishna forever, or everything, everywhere we look, can remind us of Krishna. So it's an incredible place that we live in, this planet Earth. One time in a lecture Prabhupada was giving in Los Angeles, he said, if you desire to forget Krishna, he will help you forget him forever. And you can just imagine like that, those words must have given like goosebumps to the devotees, like, oh boy. But if you want to remember him, then he'll do everything to remind you of him everywhere you go. So that's the special experience of being in this material world, is we have the opportunity to find him in everything. And we can pray. If it's something we struggle with, if we do get caught up in this world, we can pray to Krishna, please help me remember you at every step. Like, let me find ways to think about you while I'm doing my schooling or my driving to the store or washing my dishes or whatever mundane task I'm doing. You know, Krishna is so kind that, you know, Prabhupada said that even, you know how Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that if you drink water, you can taste, like Krishna is the taste of water. Like So Prabhupada made it even more liberal. He said that Krishna is the taste of any liquid that you're attracted to. And he said, any liquid thing, the taste which attracts you, that is Krishna. Even if you are a drunkard, you're fond of tasting wine, Prabhupada's saying, I should recommend that you simply think, this taste of wine is Krishna. That will make a yogi of you. That will make you the greatest yogi. If you simply think this, that I'm tasting wine, oh, very nice, this is Krishna. Anyway, that's the perfection, he's saying. That was in a class in Stockholm in 73. So like, imagine just how liberal that is, that no matter what we're doing, even if we don't use this as an excuse, obviously, right? We know that, like, okay, let's go drink wine. But it's just to encourage us that, yes, even if we're struggling and we're like caught up in some material activity, there is a way to connect that to Krishna. There's a way to elevate my thoughts and remind me of something higher. So we were talking about this on Saturday, and Arjuna, you were mentioning something funny. I thought maybe you could share that here, that you did with a friend of yours.
I would go on like japa walks with my friend, and we would be walking down the city, and sometimes we would see like kind of like normal but like interesting things. And so it'd be like this lady with a dog, and the dog's just like totally dragging her down the street. And I would just look to her and I'd be like, purport, and then you'd be like the materialist being dragged by. So we kind of spiritualize everyday things that we would see as we walk.
Yeah, that's so nice. And to think of the like philosophy of Krishna consciousness, like in the world around us, like metaphors or analogies, like the materialist being pulled by their senses, like this lady's being pulled by her dog. It's just like a simple and fun way to apply Krishna consciousness. It keeps the mind, it's sort of like a, yeah, it keeps it fun, Krishna consciousness, because you can use your creativity finding ways to connect to Krishna. I do this sometimes when I'm driving. I think about, like, somehow, for whatever reason, traffic often reminds me of philosophical points. And there, for example, I'll just give you an example. Like, there'll be a traffic light ahead, right? But it's way down the street, way ahead of us. And I'll be driving here and someone races past me on the lane next to me, like they're so, I don't know, just that energy, that passion, mode of passion energy is like, whew. And then we end up being at the same exact traffic light, even though they were like swerving past me, like getting, you know, like that kind of, you get that energy that they're like, hey, like get past the slowpoke, right? And then we both end up right there at that light anyway. And so I've had thoughts about this, like how in life, so this is an example of like thinking philosophically, could be like, oh, in life, so often someone will be full of arrogance, like maybe in myself, like I feel this pride, like look how great I am. And then at the end of the day, we're all going to face the same material calamities. Like we're not, none of us are going to get out of it. Someone might be thinking they're on their high horse about something, right? Like full of arrogance, like whoo, whipping by, look at my red convertible or whatever. And then there we are stuck at the same stoplight. So things like that. So that's just an example that comes to mind, but.
Death is the ultimate red light.
Yeah. Death is the ultimate red light. So yes, Advaita.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It was a while back, some years ago, we picked up someone's Radha Maharaj from the airport in New York. We were driving back to, at that time, Bhaktivedanta Ashram, same place where the Bhakti Center is now. So he started playing that game, you know, just on our way back. Maharaj was on his front seat. So he said, all these billboards just coming up. So he said, what do they make out of this? And it turned to one of us. Then he said something. It was a purport to, you know, just a random billboard. And then he just kept going. Like he was just on an offense of pushing the boundary of heavy material energy coming to us. But I could see how Maharaj was pushing that boundary back by transferring the whole experience and connecting with Krishna. So I think it's very important. And the more you have in terms of the references, the more your mind is filled up with Krishna consciousness, the more you will be able to see. So it's very important that we make our sadhana strong.
Yes.
And absorb ourselves. Otherwise, you'll be seeing billboards and you'll be sucked in.
Yeah.
Because you have no point of reference.
The same billboard can be a totally different experience depending on our consciousness, how we apply it. That's a really good point. I wanted to ask you did you have something, Govinda? Yeah. Sure. I was going to do a little exercise and then we'll do your question. So just a brief exercise to demonstrate this is I'm going to mention some totally mundane things and you could raise your hand in like one sentence, what comes to you about how you could connect that, what you could do either directly reminding you of Krishna in some way or a philosophical point or a prayerful mentality. So we'll just do a few of those quickly here. So here is, it's Tuesday night and you need to take your recycle bins out to the curb. How do you connect that? And if you can't think of a direct way, then you can always chant Hare Krishna while you're bringing the recycle bins to the curb.
Yeah, when it comes to recycle, not always, but just now when you said it, I always think of like helping Mother Earth and more importantly, molding our lives in a way that it's simple living and high thinking. And then my mind right now, it went back to, you know, when you do, let's say, Navadit Mangal Parikram and all those plates that are, you know, are made of these leaves and throwing them out, you know, for the cows to finish the leftovers. So that was something that just came across
my mind. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Prabhupada.
I was thinking that all the material things are ultimately Krishna's energy, prakriti, and prakriti is eternal. So they take different forms at different times. They manifest in different shapes, but then they change their shapes, they change their forms, but the energy continues in some form or another. So these things are now like, you know, cardboard cartons and cans and bottles, but they're going to eternally exist. They're going to be, you know, crushed and reconstituted and come out as something else. And but that's the nature of this world, that things are always changing, but ultimately the energy underlying it all is eternal.
Wow, that's a really deep philosophical point. Yes. Yeah, Christine.
When we recycle things, it's basically like we drink something that's in a can, let's say, and we toss the can, and then we put in that extra effort to bring the cans and the recycling bin out to the curb so that they'll be collected and turned into something useful. When we think about like happiness and sadness in life, or like things that are joyful or things that are suffering, we think of like, oh, the happiness is like, oh, that brings us closer to Krishna. Oh, Krishna, thank you for this wonderful thing. But the suffering can also bring us closer to Krishna. So things that we, you know, might not think are, might not, you know, we might not like want to pursue suffering or want to like hold on to our sufferings, but these things are still benefit us in the way that like we can take these used cans and bring them to recycling, and then they will benefit, if not ourselves, then maybe somebody else.
Very nice. Thank you. Janaki.
On the same note as Prabhupada Priya, I was just thinking of samsara and how like this soul has been recycled so many times in so many different bodies for so long.
Nice. Yeah, you can see there's such a variety of ways to connect that activity. Like the consciousness can be in those thoughts while walking to the curb. So let's do one more here. It's your grandmother's birthday and you're going to call her. And your grandmother's not directly, she's not practicing bhakti yoga.
Right, that's what I was going to say. I'm assuming my grandmother is not a devotee. So in that case, remember Prabhupada once said that devotees, any person's spiritual life begins when they appreciate a devotee. So if she's not a devotee, but if I'm being kind to her, I'm being nice, following my duty as a grandson and being a friend to her, taking care of her, then she will appreciate that, me as a person, me as a devotee, and that will ultimately, that can attract her to Krishna consciousness or to bhakti, and she may understand that devotees are really nice people. And in that sense.
Thank you. That's a great answer. Let's do one other one. You're about to go in for a job interview.
But today, like, why should a devotee perform material duties? So like that can be a motivation that, like, if I'm looking into like going to Grihastha Ashram, like going into this job interview, I can like get some like financial like security from there, and I can use that to support other devotees who are in my ashram, and I can use that to support the temple. So let me do my best so that, and if Krishna desires, let me do my best so that I can use this in Krishna's service.
Nice. Yeah.
Very get nice. Fired up.
Kevin.
I was thinking when going to an interview, we can think about the Gita and not be attached to the results. Just know that we're showing up there, you know, to do our duty, and if it's supposed to happen, then it will, and if not, so that we don't get into anxiety over am I going to get it, am I not going to get it, but just kind of show up, do the best that we can. And...
Yes, thanks too.
Hare Krishna. A new book is coming up called Career Dharma, The Natural Art of Work by Dr. Edith Best.
Yeah, Urmila Devi. She's giving
it Urmila Devi. Mataji, yes. Mm-hmm. So that's very useful. I have done a review of that book. So, you know, all these devotees who are going for interview, it's very good to read
Yeah, so the new book is coming out. It's called Career Dharma. I don't think it's out yet, but it's coming out very soon. So yeah, keep your ears open for that. Thanks for sharing. So let's see, one more comment. Prabhupada Priya?
I was thinking that it could be used as an analogy, because when you go for an interview, you're like, you know, before that point, you've been working on your qualifications and education and, you know, maybe internship or whatever, and you're dressing, you know, your best and like that. So, and then you're going to the employer, potential employer, and basically saying, please accept me in your service. So it's like the same thing, analogy for Krishna, right?
That yeah.
We try to qualify ourselves by, you know, studying the Shastras, doing devotional service, doing our sadhana. And then we're like, Krishna, please accept me as your servant.
Yeah, nice. You can see how it's a fun activity, right? It could be like this could be a game at a party, like to connect, work our minds. How do we connect to Krishna? So end of year party. Yeah. It's a great exercise. You know, I was just thinking one more thing with the billboards, that we used to take a lot of road trips with my dad when we were young, and we would see the lottery ones, especially I think in Georgia, the huge numbers. And then my dad would turn to us and say, okay, what would you do if you won the lottery? What would you do with that money? And that exercise is also really powerful. Like, how would I use that in service? So, and Govinda, I had one question. Comment. Okay.
Prabhupada was expert at this.
Yeah.
So I just remember when you were talking about these examples, that he was in the plane and he was watching a movie. And a disciple was next to him, and he was just bamboozled basically by Prabhupada watching a movie. And he asked, you know, basically, what are you watching? And it was Charlie Chaplin. And then Prabhupada made the comment that Charlie Chaplin is, the humor is very much like Krishna's. So he was able to connect the beauty of the humor to Krishna. Mm-hmm. And even like on the beaches, you know, morning walks, I would make all these examples about crabs and all kind of things. And I just recently listened to a lecture, and it kind of really struck me that, you know, we're talking about remembering Krishna, connecting to Krishna. But then, you know, when we chant, are we remembering Krishna? Because the whole purpose of chanting is to remember Krishna. So I was just, you know, thinking.
Thank you for those comments. Yeah. Prabhupada was expert at this. Sometimes people would be confused because he would point at a basically like a super simple object. And then like one time he was, you know how birds, they'll use the bathroom, like, and he pointed at that poop on the ground and he said, what's that? And then devotees were like, you know, confused. And then he said, that shows, and then he would think in a very philosophical way, that shows that these same birds are always coming to the same tree to try to find their happiness here or something like that. And then he made a whole metaphor about how we try again and again to enjoy the same thing. We get attached to the location. Yeah.
Govinda mentioned Chaplin. I don't know, you're probably aware of it. Towards the end of Chaplin's life, he was in Switzerland with his, you know, much younger wife. And so it happened that a book distributor came along, and he has received Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita towards the end of his life.
Oh, nice.
And then from the words of his wife, we got to find out that he actually really appreciated Prabhupada's Gita. And so I could see, like, the, you know, full circle there. Prabhupada appreciated him, and then he was given a chance to receive that mercy as well. And how important it is when we do it also, appreciate someone that is, or could be, and it is, beginning of their spiritual life, engaging them in reference in relation to Krishna.
Thank you. I didn't know that other part of the story. Yes. Thank you all. So I hope you have a wonderful day. Hare Krishna. Jai Srila Prabhupada.